Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Again, we have the power. You know, we got this man in office. I think we're all proud of Barack and his accomplishments. Everybody I know in our communities are praying for us. Every day we feel that, and let me just tell your listeners that it means all the world to us to know that there are prayer circles out there and people who are keeping the spirits clean around us.
Keeping the spirits clean around us. I'm speechless, and I'm in the business of talking. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Can a listener to the Savage Nation please rescue me and tell me what the First Lady means by prayer circles around America, keeping the spirits clean around us? Is that something I should understand that I missed in college? I don't understand that one. I don't mean to be rude in any manner, but I have no idea what that means. If they're going to invoke witchcraft in the White House next, I'd like to know about it so that I can prepare by jumping aboard a spaceship and taking a flight to the Catskill Mountains, where I can get a sandwich of a borscht and shav before the high holidays next year. If I don't get there on time, then I'll drink a glass of seltzer and slide on some linoleum back to the Bronx in the 1940s, where I can sit with my grandmother and speak in Russian and find out what happened during the Russian Revolution that drove us to a stage where we wind up with an overt Marxist in the White House who needs crop circles instead of prayer circles in order to help him raise the crops so that we can avoid the Kulak situation of the Soviet Union. Very good, Michael. One out of 10,000 got that little drift, that little fun opening. Phil, did you enjoy it, Beowulf? I did it for your entertainment. I was just speaking in tongues, because if this woman's talking about keeping our spirits clean, I may as well get into the other side of my being, which is the mystical, magical side of the Michael Savage Show. You know what I'm saying? Man is magical, woman mystical. You want me to go into that one? I'll be glad to do that as well. But there is some magic in the air, because I want to thank all of my listeners for making the Savage Nation this blockbuster hit, not only as a radio show, but truthfully, I got to say it again, Trickle-Up Poverty is a blowout. It's a raging bestseller. Yes, it's number three on the New York Times bestseller list. Don't be depressed by that, because the sales of last week were based upon 4 days, not a full five. The other guys, to their credit, came in on a roll from the week before. You also didn't have enough books in the stores to satisfy the demand. The publisher went back and printed another 50,000, I'm hearing. So listen to me. Things are good. You've proven that A, talk radio is the most viable instrument in the entire media landscape. And number two, that the radio audience is motivated to go out and buy books and to vote. And you're going to sweep the Democrats back to the Soviet Union, where they'll be very, very happy indeed. Because in the Soviet Union of the past, as you well know, there was a two-party system. There was the Politburo of the bureaucrats, and then there were the peasants, basically. Fundamentally, the Democrats are using the same model as the ex-Soviet Union. Let me give you an example. I give you many in the book, right? Here's a new one. My book is called Trickle-Up Poverty, right? And I'm focusing on the economy. Now, one of the most corrupt officials in the entire government is the loudest liberal. Don't you always notice that? The loudest liberal is usually the dirtiest of the bunch. The one who screams the most about the poor, and you help the poor, and you help the poor. Listen to this story about Bonnie Frank. Now, I'm not mocking Bonnie Frank because of his lifestyle. I understand that Bonnie Frank has a dog. And it's not a husky, it's a hussy. And I understand that we've gone from huskies to hussies in one generation. And I don't blame him solely for that one. He can have a hussy as a dog, just as I could have a poodle. But a story came out today in the Boston Herald. If this doesn't prove beyond a reasonable doubt how corrupt this individual is, I'd like to know what would. What will change your psychotic mind to understand how rotten these people are? Here it is. Boston Herald from today. U.S. Rep. Bonnie Frank, immersed in one of the toughest political fights of his career, took a free private jet to the Virgin Islands courtesy of a Maine congresswoman's billionaire fiancé. Now, unto itself, that doesn't bother me. They all do this jet thing, even though it's illegal what he did, by the way. Okay? Somewhat. Or let's say quasi-legal. And it doesn't look kosher. But wait, it gets worse. The fiancé upon whose jet he flew owned a hedge fund. He still does, by the way. Paloma Securities, a subsidiary of Mr. Sussman's Greenwich, Connecticut-based hedge fund, here it is, received $200 million in 2009 as part of the $180 billion federal bailout of troubled insurance giant AIG, record show. Now, if this is not criminal behavior and criminal activity, I'd like to know what is. Can anyone listening to this show who is out of a job or who lost his mortgage tell me that you will ever vote for a Democrat when you see that Bonnie Frank pushed $200 million of federal bailout money to a hedge fund billionaire? You're telling me that's the country you want to live in? And remember, Bonnie Frank voted for the bailout in October of 08. And he reported this trip on the guy's jet in required House financial filings and valued the flight at $1,500. Originally, Bonnie listed the trip vaguely as, quote, first-class round-trip travel by private aircraft in a congressional filing in May. Then in July, Bonnie Frank amended the report to show he traveled from Portland, Maine to the Virgin Islands. And he called the discrepancy a clerical error. Sussman is a huge Democratic campaign donor with homes in Maine and Connecticut, but he is living in St. John, the Virgin Islands. Now, why would a Democrat billionaire who has homes in Maine and Connecticut with a private jet live in St. John, the Virgin Islands? And why would Bonnie Frank steer $200 million of federal bailout money to a hedge fund? Ladies and gentlemen, we are living not in a banana republic, because that may be seen as a salacious statement, given that I am talking about Bonnie Frank. So I cannot say we are living in a banana republic in that regard. We are living in something even lower than a banana republic under these Huskies who are now running the United States of America. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We're open to crop circles. We're open to prayer circles. We're open to seltzer drinkers. We're open to oil and vinegar shakers. We are open to oil and vinegar. I had that dish last night. You remember, if you listened to the show yesterday, a caller from New York said that he was eating a dish, and he gave me the Italian for it. For a minute, I didn't get it because it was such good brogue. I mean, he did it in not the textbook Italian. He did it in the real down-earth. I couldn't catch it for a minute. And then I said, wait a minute, that's oil and the garlic. He says, you're right. So last night I went out to my friend's restaurant. I shouldn't have gone that far. I was tired from the ride. But I went to Aliotta's. You know I love the joint. And on the way in, I meet two guys. You can't believe this. On the way in, I meet two guys. One guy is one of the members of the San Francisco Police Department SWAT team for 28 years. This is the guy who takes bombs apart as part of the SWAT team. The other guy is a giant, like 6'5", built like Sylvester Stallone is at his peak. And Mike, where are you? You know, they change your station, blah, blah, blah. I told him, well, I'm on, you know, coming out of Sacramento. It was a great, you know how you get a doorway shot sometimes? It was like such male energy coming out of that doorway that people all over Fisherman Wharf moved aside. It was unbelievable. So the big guy, nicest guy in the world, had his two little children with him, like 8 and 7. And he told me, Mike, he said, I'm a third generation San Franciscan. He said, my dad lives behind me. My son lives next to me. I said, you have paradise, my friend. And you know, that's one of the things I love about San Francisco is the close-knit families here. There's an awful lot of them. It's very, very beautiful to be around that in the city. So when I knock the city, believe me, I'm not talking about the bedrock of the city, guys like this who built the city, their fathers built the city. I am talking about the interlopers, like the ones who are running the city now, the fakers, the phonies. Okay, you get the picture? So I had a very nice night. I had the oil and the garlic spaghetti. I actually, one of the companions had a dish. I just ate it for lunch. I don't throw food away. No matter what success I may have, I will not throw food away. I was raised poor, and my mother always used to say to me, it's a shame to throw food out. Well, she was right in a way. I mean, it's kind of a crime. Then later on, as I got older, I read George Osawa's Zen Macrobiotics. When I went into that for a while to self-cure myself of migraine headaches, which I did on a number 10 brown rice diet, believe it or not, I go that far back. I mean, today I no longer into that. I haven't been for a long while. It's a very tough diet. But I remember George Osawa in his book wrote that it is a crime to throw away even one grain of rice. And what he was saying was, is that if at that time, let's say, I don't know, what was there, 2 billion people on the earth, maybe a billion and a half. He said if each person threw away one grain of rice every day, he said we'd be throwing away one and a half billion grains of rice. So he understood what that meant. And that's, of course, what I see. I see everything in that global concept, even to this day. So I need you to go to bookstores and demand a copy of Trickle Up Poverty to make certain that Obama doesn't throw away any more $200 million advances to hedge fund billionaires. I'll be right back.
Savage.
But we got to keep it coming, and this election is going to make a statement about whether, you know, Barack's power and support is as deep. There are people who are questioning whether his support is as deep. You know, they want to make out like, well, this is just a one-time thing, right?
Oh, we're praying for that. We are praying it's a one-time thing. In fact, we're praying it's a halftime thing, and that he resigns any day now. When you read that Bonnie Frank steered $200 million, according to the Boston Herald, to a hedge fund billionaire who's a major donor to the Democrat Party, I want to know where the FBI is. I'd like to know why the FBI is not investigating the $200 million federal bailout money that went to this hedge fund billionaire. If this is not corruption, I'd like to know what is. This is corruption. It's beyond comprehension what's going on in this country, how this Democrat regime has melted this country's not only morality into the toilet, they've melted the morality of the nation into the gutter, but they've melted our finances into the toilet. So go ahead, keep going to the universities and tell them that they need to vote for him without disclosing what you actually just did. Are people that dumb in this country? Are people that naive, that dumb, that disconnected? I just don't know. I believe it may be so. I believe it may be so. New York, John, go ahead, please. How do you feel about learning today that Bonnie Frank steered $200 million of federal bailout money to a hedge fund billionaire who gave money to the Democrat National Committee?
I'm not surprised in the least. I expect more thievery to come in the months to come. These Democrats have lost their grip. They're going to try every illegal tactic they can. And they get away with it, too, because they're Dems. I hate to make this a Republican and a Democrat thing. If this was Republicans, the FBI would be involved pronto, and you know that.
Oh, I agree with you. I'd like to know why the FBI is not investigating this $200 million steered to this company. There should be an immediate investigation. The American people are demanding it. Look, I didn't make this up. This came out in the Boston Herald today. This should be a major league story in every newspaper. But you know how it works. Michael Savage doesn't exist. Corruption from Bonnie Frank doesn't exist. Corruption from Chris Dodd didn't exist. Corruption in Harry Reid's state didn't exist. Corruption wherever you turn doesn't exist unless it has an R next to its name.
He gets away with this because they're Dems. He's one of Obama's men. That's what people don't understand. That's why he gets away. That's why all these people get away with it, because they're Obama's henchmen. It's going to happen until this man is...
Well, I don't know that they're going to get away with this one. $200 million is a big enough scam and a big enough crime to be investigated. If, you know, $200 million went to this guy's hedge fund through bailout money, there's something wrong with that picture. John, did you find a copy yet of TUP?
Well, just going to get to that, Dr. Savage. I called you last week. I told you that the girl in Borders gave me like an attitude when I asked for your book.
Yeah.
Well, I went to Costco right next door, and they were very nice. As a matter of fact, they had your book, what was left of your book, next to Glenn Beck's book. And Glenn Beck's book, nobody was buying it, and there was two copies left of your book. So your
book, he's got to pull another stunt. I mean, at Coke, I mean, what's left for this guy? You see, at least you got a laugh out of it. No one can take away our sense of humor, John. You know, gallows humor is is very important. I had gallows humor since I'm 5 years old because I was on the gallows ever since I was born. John, I'm sending you a free copy of Tup. Give it away to a Democrat friend in your apartment building. Better yet, give it away to your father-in-law, your ex-father-in-law. Better yet, give it away to your ex-son-in-law. Better yet, give it away to your haberdasher. You remember a phrase like the haberdasher? No one even has haberdashers anymore. Haberdasher. I never knew what a haberdasher was. Where did that come from? Haberdasher. Pennsylvania, Marianne, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Marianne? Go ahead, please.
I want to thank you so much for your guts and fortitude in writing this book and spilling the beans. I love it.
Well, Marianne, let me tell you something. It's not without risk. I recognize that a lot of very powerful people are not going to be very happy with what is exposed in trickle-up poverty. This is not just rhetoric or opinion. I have the facts with 30 pages of references about the real goings-on inside that administration. And believe me, America should read every page.
And they will. I spent 45 minutes on the phone today with the editor-in-chief of my newspaper because I was blogging your book and all of my comments were being flagged. I was fed up. I called.
Are you kidding me? They flagged your comments about my book in a local newspaper? It's the censorship and the Soviet style has reached that level?
Yes, it has.
What's the name of your local paper?
The Scranton Times Tribune.
Well, look, that's why they've gone out of business, Mary, and they're run by a bunch of extremists who really are an embarrassment to the word journalist. You know that.
Yes, I do.
All right, Mary, and you know the main thing is that you know where to get your information from, the internet, talk radio, you got the book, you're getting another free copy. Stay on the line. Go ahead. Take it away. Walk away cocktail. Everyone wins today. Anyone who gets on gets a free one. What do you think of this crop circle thing from Michelle Obama, the prayer circle? I still don't know what this means by keeping our spirits clean around them. Is there a religious individual who knows what that means, keeping spirits clean around them? Because I could use some spirit cleanup down here.
Savage.
Yes, it's me and I'm in love again. Had no love and say you know when. You know I love you. Yes, I do. And I'm saving all my loving just for you. Need your loving and
all right, guys. Welcome back to the one and only Savage Nation. With you every day at this hour on your local station. Radio is now king, as you well know. You don't expect to read that as a blaring headline in your local, you know, failed newspaper. I have proven that talk radio is the most viable of all media, and the fact is, the proof is in the pudding. I got blacked out in the media because of a boss tweet over at Fox News. The Westies over at Fox News forbid me from going on the network. And what the Westies want, you talk about a sexist operation. Pittsburgh, PA, Liz, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I was disputed today that you are actually a doctor and not, or sorry, that you're just a radio personality by a clerk today.
Wait, you went to buy the book and she said I'm not a doctor?
That is correct.
I see. So let me ask you something, but Al Sharpton is a reverend? And Henry Kissinger is a doctor? Does she not understand what a doctor actually is, a philosophical degree? I have one of the highest degrees in the land, okay, a real one that I earned through blood, sweat, and tears. And the book clerk doesn't recognize it, I guess. That's a real court of public opinion, I suppose.
Yeah, I actually asked her if she knew where the state of California was, and she gave me a smug look and then kindly pointed me to the floor where I said, that's where you keep your bestsellers. Thank you very much.
No, that's where she usually is found crawling after the lights go out.
Yes.
Liz, you know, don't worry about the insults. You're a gutsy woman. I can hear it. And you got to stand up to people who try to run you down because she was insulting you, not me, as you well know.
Oh, absolutely. I'm 32.
Me too. I'm sorry. Say it again.
I'm 32. I'm sure she was probably 52, maybe 62. And I'm sure she burned a few bras in her time.
Ooh, well, it sounds to me like she met her match, Liz.
She did.
I don't suffer fools gladly. I don't, Liz. Give it back to her as good as she gives it to you. That's what I always say. She goes for the throat, then go for her eyes.
One of the two.
So, Liz, did you grow up in Pittsburgh?
Actually, I grew up in Ireland, and then I moved to Pittsburgh in 85. So,
She messed with a real Irish lass, huh?
Did indeed.
Oh, she doesn't know what the old country does to people, does she?
No, she doesn't. I'm sure she
tough as nails. Tough as nails. Those potatoes have a way of growing on you, don't they?
Yes, a fine spud is what I am.
I love it. I have such wonderful Irish friends, primarily through my drinking experiences, Liz.
Well,
I mean, I know it's a stereotype, but I really have always gotten along with the Irish people in the pubs.
You know what? They truly are, you know, unwanted everywhere, so they make friends anywhere they can.
You know that's absolutely true, and after I was banned in Britain, the Irish love me even more. They now have a twinkle in their eye in the Irish pubs I go into.
Yes, we do. And Bass is good beer, so, hey, can't go wrong.
Liz, I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Take it and hit someone over the head with it. Enjoy it. It says it weighs about 3 pounds. It's such a big book, you can use it as body armor. I would think that if one of the soldiers in Afghanistan strung it in front of his body, a series of these books, they have a better protection than the fake body armor that one of the fake contractors is sending the military. We probably have contractors making body armor now with paper mache inside in order to save a few dollars so they could fly Bonnie Frank on a private jet to the Virgin Islands. Isn't that ironic that Bonnie Frank would go to the Virgin Islands unto itself when you think about that? Maybe he's trying to recapture it. Maybe there's a myth that when you go down there, you recapture it or something somehow. I don't know if you know, certain things once lost can never be regained. I think that's in Oliver Goldsmith's boat. Oh, no, he was saying a bold peasantry once lost cannot be regained, right? I don't think Bonnie Frank was ever a bold peasant. Something tells me he was never a bold peasant. I think he was just bold. 1-800-449-8255. What else is in the news? Let me read you the news stories that we pulled out. Rival blasts Bonnie Frank's swanky free jet ride. $200 million federal bailout money to a hedge fund operator. Go ahead. Swallow that one in the bookstores. Hispanic district going Republican. Here's a poll by a firm unknown to me showing Republican challenger Ruth McClung leading four-term Democratic incumbent Raul Grijalva 39-37 in Arizona 7. This district was designed to be Arizona's second Hispanic majority House district. Wow. Well, whatever this means, I don't know. We'll all find out in 3 weeks, by the way. Nancy Pelosi warns that Democratic women face wipeout. Don't you love how they play the women card? She sends out a fundraising plea saying that female Democratic House members could face a wipeout in the midterm elections. Would that be a loss? You mean because they're female, they're automatically good? I hate this thing where people use race or sex to tell you that makes them superior. You know, I read this years ago by Bertrand Russell with his great essay, The Superior Virtue of the Oppressed. Now, this was a lifetime socialist, Bertrand Russell, a genius, one of the great geniuses. And he wrote The Superior Virtue of the Oppressed because he also saw it going on back in the 50s where the British were being told that the oppressed peoples had superior virtue necessarily, which is, of course, absurd. And so she writes a thing, your generous support is urgently needed to help our courageous Democratic women under attack by the Republicans and their outside groups so we can maintain our strong Democratic House majority. Isn't this disgusting? Aren't you women, don't you deserve something better than Nancy Pelosi? I think you do. Top U.S. communist says our country is in the midst of a power struggle. No kidding. No kidding. Top U.S. communist says our country is in the midst of a power struggle. Yes, they have the power right now, and they're afraid that they're about to lose it. I have told you Obama's a naked Marxist. Now this communist is basically agreeing. You know what Tacitus wrote? You know who he is, don't you? He's not my shoemaker. Tacitus was a Roman historian. He lived between 56 and 120 AD. And he wrote, the more corrupt the state, the more numerous the laws. The more corrupt the state, the more numerous the laws. By the way, that's a very, very true. It's a great truism. So now you have Congress passing 125 bills into law in 2009. And your tireless federal regulatory agencies were even busier. They issued 3,503 new rules and regulations about pool heaters, clothes washers, SUV emissions, you name it, they passed laws about it. Now, if you go back to the Constitution, it says all legislative power shall be vested in the Congress of the United States. And yet we're finding out that the unelected rule America, regulation without representation, these rules are being written by Obama's czars, Obama's minions, all warned in trickle-up poverty. Mark in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I was at a Barnes & Noble in Queens, New York, and yep. I went in there, and I just turned my head, and I saw your book, a nice display. You could see it right in front, no problem.
Well, B&N reordered. I mean, they sold out and they've reordered. So has Borders. And they've done very, very well by me. You know, there's occasional bad apple in any company. You understand that. Or people are going to push their agenda. But I'm very happy with the results, Mark. It can't get any better for me, truthfully.
Very happy.
Where in Queens do you live? What neighborhood?
Regal Park, Queens.
Oh, my God. Forest Hills High School.
Yep.
Is it still there or has it been destroyed by graffiti?
No, it's still there.
Is it still a school a kid can go to without a gun?
well, they had some incidences, but not too bad.
No, it's not too bad over there. You raised kids there, did you, Mark?
I'm single.
Well, I don't blame you. Some of my best friends are single. I don't blame them either. Okay, Mark, I'll send you a free copy of Trickle Up. No, last night's funny. So the one guy, they're both tremendous guys. I mean, real men's men. I told you the... One guy has his two children, three-generation Italian family outside there. And the other guy, I didn't see his kids. I said, do you have any kids? He said, what, are you crazy? I'm not married. I said, okay, you got both ends of the spectrum, whatever you want to do. You know, different way to relate to life. Who says you have to get married? Where's it written? Is it written in the Bible that you have to get married? You know, there's certain things that aren't in the Bible, like you have to get married, you have to have kids. You know, it doesn't say you have to be rich either, by the way. There's nothing in the Bible that says you must be wealthy to be a full human being or you're immoral if you're poor. You remember when that came out about during the Jerry Falwell years, that wealth is Jesus, or if you love Jesus, it meant you had to help the wealthy get wealthier? Now, I'm sorry, I hate to sound a little socialist here, but that really grated me when they turned the church into like it was almost like an Amway sales point for the rich. I didn't like that. I read the Holy Scriptures cover to cover, in all my yellow tags, nowhere do I see anything that says you surely shall be rich or God will punish you. Nothing about wealth. It says thou shalt not oppress thy neighbor, nor rob him. The wages of a hired servant shall not abide with thee all night until the morning. Thou shalt not curse the deaf, nor put a stumbling block before the blind. But thou shalt fear thy God, I am the Lord. This is beautiful, actually, when you think about it. Thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people. Well, that's the end of talk radio. Neither shalt thou stand idly by the blood of thy neighbor. Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thy heart. Thou shalt surely rebuke thy neighbor. Really? I'm allowed to hate my neighbor. Wait a minute. Thou shalt surely rebuke thy neighbor. I've been doing it all my life. Most of them are worth rebuking. And not bear sin because of him. I don't quite understand the translation. Thou shalt not take vengeance, nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people. But I can bear a grudge against the children not of thy people? Okay, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I'll tell you what, I'll leave that to you. Ye shall keep my statutes. Thou shalt not let thy cattle gender with thy diverse kind. See, it's anti-diversity, the Bible. In other words, not everything that's diverse is good. It says it. Thou shalt not let thy cattle gender with a diverse kind. In other words, don't let your cattle lie down with a mule. You don't put a cow in a stall with a mule. You get it? Thou shalt not sow thy field with two kinds of seed. Neither shall there come upon thee a garment of two kinds of stuff mingled together. You either have cotton or you have felt, but you don't have a jacket made of cotton and felt. And whoever lieth carnally with a woman, that is a bondmaid, designated for a man, and not at all redeemed, nor was freedom given her, there shall be inquisition. They shall not be put to death because she was not free. It gets too complicated. Now, I want to go back to Michelle Obama's saying about divination, because it's actually not in the Bible. I want you to play the piece where she says that people have prayer rings for her outside the churches where there are crop rings. Play that piece.
Once again, we have the power. You know, we got this man in office. I think we're all proud of Barack and his accomplishments. Everybody I know in our communities are praying for us. Every day we feel that. And let me just tell your listeners that it means all the world to us to know that there are prayer circles out there and people who are keeping the spirits clean around us.
The Bible in Leviticus says, you shall not practice divination nor soothsaying. You shall not practice divination nor soothsaying. So if Ms. Obama, or the First Lady, whichever you wish, believes that the black churches should be praying for the president, she's certainly entitled to suggest that. But if she's telling them to keep, they should do so to keep the spirits clean around them, I find that somewhat questionable in terms of the biblical literature, you know. You shall not round the corners of your heads, neither shalt thou mar the corners of thy beard. That's why the Orthodox Jews wear those big sideburns. You shall not make any cuttings in your flesh for the dead. You see the young girls. It's the Bible. So if you're a Jew and you have a tattoo, you have to be buried in a Christian cemetery. Or as Lenny Bruce once said, so cut off my arm and bury my arm in a Christian cemetery. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Brawlers, a deep chart and barbecue ribs, you get the treat of the week. But when you dig that real fine
Savage
job,
Nation. Gold settles at record high above $1,370 an ounce on Wednesday, boosted by worries over dollar depreciation. It's a repeat of history. Those of you who know history know we're repeating it. And those of you who don't know your history are doomed to repeat it. So said George Santayana Savage. Gold settled up to end above $1,370 an ounce. It's gone up 25% so far in 2010, all a result of Barack Obama's insane economic policies, which border on the ludicrous what the man is doing. You print money, and what do you expect to happen to an economy? The dollar becomes devalued. So what do you think people are going to run in? If the past is any predictor, this is one man's opinion. We're going to have a little bit of an inflation coming up a la Jimmy Carter right after the election. My supposition is that in 2011, we get a little 18%er by 2011, 2012. We get about an 18%, you know, in other words, say, well, that's great. I'll get interest in the banks again. Well, yeah, then you're going to get run up in some real estate prices again. So, you know, this is all guessing games. We have an expert coming up in the next hour because it's Money Day again. 25% this year. The government has arbitrarily been printing money to try and keep the economy from imploding completely. And the only thing that will save this country would be for the corruption and graft to stop. But you cannot stop a junkie from sticking a needle in his arm, can you? You cannot stop an alcoholic from buying booze and slugging it down his gullet, can you? They need intervention. And the corrupt bums in Congress need the intervention of the FBI to stop them. And they've got to go to Bonnie Frank, who at this point, it looks very, very suspicious to me. The $200 million in stimulus money, the bailout of AIG, $200 million of it went to the hedge fund guy on whose private jet he flew, and who is a major Democrat donor. To me, I don't say it's illegal necessarily, but if it isn't, it ought to be. How's that? Only if the FBI gets these shysters and puts them before a judge and they're tried and found guilty and their assets seized and put into the National Treasury would you see a dampening of this behavior. Because junkies don't stop putting needles in their arms, do they? Alcoholics don't stop going to liquor stores and buying booze, do they? Cokeheads don't stop snorting the coke. And corrupt politicians don't stop robbing the public. So said Tacitus Savage in AD 2010. So what can I tell you? What can I tell you about what I've already told you? Here's a man who sees things in his own way. Admittedly, I come from another time and another place. I come from an America that was safe enough for your mother to walk to the grocery store at night to buy a loaf of bread without getting mugged. a time when the cops were feared and the criminals were in hiding, that if they bothered anybody, the cops gave them a good beating behind the police station, and then they ran them out of town, and then as a result, the towns were safer. But today, the cops are driven out of town by the vermin in the ACLU. I don't blame the cops for not doing their jobs. Would you do your job? Would you do your job if every cowardly bump from the ACLU was waiting to try you for a crime you didn't commit for doing your job? Who would take the job of a saint? Sacramento, Jesus, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Michael, you inspired me to become political. I never have been political. I'm 35 years old. 2 years ago, I found you on the radio, stumbled upon you. I've had to find you because you keep getting turned off around Sacramento and San Francisco and the Bay Area. And I just can't thank you enough for opening my eyes so that I can see the lies and what's been going on in this country. It disgusts me.
Well, it's going to take your generation to save us from this corruption, because we are now like a third world nation politically. In terms of the Democrats, they're far more corrupt than the Republicans. I mean, you know I'm not a big supporter of the Republican Party in general, but I've never seen corruption on this magnitude before. Jesus, I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty so you can further educate yourself as to exactly what is going on at every level of this government. Borders, economy, and security. Read it and enjoy it and spread the word with your friends before the election. That's all. Well, this hour is almost up on the Savage Nation. I know many of you are hanging on every word. You can't wait to see what I'm going to do in the next hour. I can't wait to see what I'm going to do in the next hour, because I don't know what I'm going to do in the next hour. No, I've got all the news, of course. News, views, and reviews. We got a nice trailer of a movie that you haven't heard of, because it was produced in 1971, but it has direct relevance to Barack Hussein Obama and the crop circles that are being seen around the White House. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, we're playing Ted Nugent's Cat Scratch Fever, because Ted Nugent wrote a review of Trickle Up Poverty published today in the Washington Times that I love. At least he has the guts to stand up for what he believes in and not say, oh, if I write this, perhaps Mr. Pastrami won't let me on his show. So I'm going to read it to you. A Savage Display of Conservative Intellectual Firepower by Ted Nugent. And here's what he says. If Dirty Harry wrote books instead of blowing away bad guys, he would have written Trickle Up Poverty. Thankfully, Michael Savage wrote it instead. Instead of wielding a .44 Magnum Smith & Wesson and cleaning up the streets of San Francisco like Dirty Harry, Mr. Savage banged away on the keyboard with Magnum Force and wrote a conservative Magnum manifesto in Trickle Up Poverty. While relaxing in my deer blind waiting to put an arrow through the pump station of an ultra-alert Texas white-tailed deer, I read Mr. Savage's new book. Instead of my predator eyes scanning the Texas brush for the slightest hint of movement, I found myself focused instead on Mr. Savage's dead-eye truth and common-sense words. This may have been the very first time in my hunting life that my predator attention was focused completely on something other than grocery shopping for a white-tailed deer. Many of us know Mr. Savage as the irrepressible, intelligent, and highly entertaining AM radio talk show tour de force. His radio program is the antidote for all things politically correct, status quo, brain dead, and anti-freedom. Mr. Savage's no-holds-barred radio speech got him banned from entering the UK after some liberal, limey, socialist bureaucrat claims Savage is a provocateur of hate speech. Addicted to free speech and logic, Winston Churchill would have fired the limey bureaucrat and recommended that the Queen make Mr. Savage a knight. In typical left-wing slash-and-burn politics, liberal goons can't stand an opposing argument and self-evident truth, which is why they resort to squawking about how conservatives are racist, homophobic, and the standard whining when no sound argument can be offered. I'm reading again from Ted Nugent's review of Trickle-Up Poverty in today's Washington Times. Mr. Savage crushes these numbskulls in an avalanche of historical references, conservative ideology, and common sense. The truth contained in Trickle-Up Poverty could ultimately set them free, or they can cling to their liberal bias and blindness and remain shackled and enslaved in their hopeless denial. Who needs Comedy Central when the parade of clowns just won't go away? Trickle-Up Poverty is a blazing flamethrower of truth that burns through subjects such as how President Obama's policies are crushing the middle class, the societal suicide of open borders and illegal immigration, the curse of Acorn, czars, the healthcare fraud, and other such America-destroying horror stories. Written in a passionate, full-auto style, and painstakingly researched, each chapter will arm you with a stockpile of intellectual ammo. Michael Savage swings a literary crowbar of truth and writes with a sledgehammer style. This is very good. This is like Walter Winchell. He pulls no punches and goes right for the jugular with facts, not vacuous hyperbole like Hope and Change. Mr. Savage is my kind of radio host and my kind of writer. I crave all things bold, unapologetic, defiant, witty, and smart. Trickle-Up Poverty satisfies my cravings, and then some. Read it and then dance naked around the campfire of truth. If anything, Trickle-Up Poverty exposes the radical Marxist governing abuses and ideologies of the Obamacrats. Mr. Savage not only exposes how the Marxists in power are doing their best to destroy America, but offers antidotes to their intentional ultra-destructo Saul Alinsky playbook with pragmatic common-sense solutions that would cause our forefathers to nod proudly in agreement. Mr. Savage is their kind of patriot. Mr. Obama and his army of Fedzillocrats, not so much. One of my jobs is to cause liberal loons to thrash about in uncontrollable anger. Trickle-Up Poverty will cause idiots, commies, socialists, Fedzillocrats, and various left-wing apologists and assorted bloodsuckers to overheat instantly and then spontaneously combust. Burn, baby, burn. Trickle-Up Poverty is intellectual ammunition. Lock and load. Every American who wishes to return to the great American way should read this book and gift it to everybody he cares about. Ted, thank you. I'm sending this on to Matt Drudge. We'll see if it makes it equal to the hemorrhoids' latest medical tests. 1-800-449-8. Okay, well, if you think that that's something I should do. It seems to work for him. I don't understand how this works. It's embarrassing. What kind of man would share medical tests on a regular basis with an audience? My father taught me, you know, you don't display this part of yourself. When he got a heart attack, you know, he crawled in the back of a store and died. He didn't even want to show his weakness. That's the kind of family I come from. You know, you can say what you want about it. The first one, okay, he got, you know, saved. A number of years later, the second one hit. He crawled in the back of his store and laid down and died. It ripped my heart out when I heard about it. I was 6,000 miles away. He didn't even cry out. It was over. He figured God was calling him, or destiny was calling him, or atheism was whatever. He didn't cry like a baby. He didn't scream, oh, help me. He didn't ask for the x-rays to be put on on his radio show. What kind of man does a thing like this? I'm getting sick of this. I don't even understand it anymore, what kind of people listen or watch these shows where a guy would do things over and over again. So, if Obama continues in power, a love for America and patriotism itself is liable to be declared an illness, as it was in the ex-Soviet Union in reverse. You may not know this, but things have gotten so bad under Stalin that anybody who criticized the Soviet government was declared mentally ill. And they were put into concentration camps, and they were experimented upon by corrupt medical doctors, psychiatrists, who said, yes, anyone who doesn't see the glories of the Soviet state is mentally ill and in need treatment. and they were put into prison hospitals. You don't know what the psychiatrists are capable of in any society. They've been drugging you to death your whole life. They've been drugging your children to death since they've been born with Ritalin and then other drugs. You yourself are probably on drugs. They're drugging our troops now. One out of five troops is on a psychiatric drug. How many of our people in Congress are drugged? How many of these dolts, these corrupt dolts, are drugged up on some kind of psychiatric drug, which would explain their numbness and their lack of ability to understand that people hate their guts? I'll be right back.
Savage.
I wonder who wrote the book of love. Tell me, who wrote the book of love? I've got to know the answer.
I gotta go on a diet, man. I packed on weight when the book came out. I was doing good. I'd lost 10 pounds getting ready, you know, for the battle for Hell Week last week. I shed weight. I was feeling good, looked in the mirror, looking good. Then around the time, you know, you start to eat more around the tension. I'm one of those who eats around tension. I'm from that culture. We don't starve ourselves and just drink scotch and eat white bread and mayonnaise. We go into the food department. We hit the fridge. We open that box 100 times a day and pull out whatever's in there. So I put it on again. I mean, but it's like I'm like an opera singer. I mean, I do need energy in order to get up here every day, don't I? So today, I try to stay away from a lot of meat. Truthfully, you know that I'm an omnivore, and I'm not against the carnitine found in red meat. I've told you we need it because we're omnivores. I'm not a veg, but I try to, you know, for years I've stayed away from heavy meats, except on a. But like last night, we were in the place there. I loved it. So she got the bolognese, right? The silent G. People say bolognese. That's like going to IHOP. I will have the spaghetti bolognese, please. It's like Olive Garden. So I had the spaghetti bolognese. I didn't eat the bolognese. I had the fish and whatever. But I took home the spaghetti bolognese from the other because no one could eat. It was too much, the portion. I knew what I was going to do. I ate it for lunch just before the show. I took it in like a doctor pharmacist. I won't throw food away. It was so good. It was heavy, admittedly. The meat in there was heavy. And I thought back on last night's show where the guy called in and his wife made him the spaghetti oil. And that's what I should have had, something lean. But I need the power. I need the furnace. Needs the wood put in there, you know. And this weekend I'm going away, as I told you, I don't like traveling, but I'm going to go one night up to the mountains. Did I tell you already? I didn't tell him yet, did I? No. Because it's late October, mid-October. It's the end of this autumn up there. And you get some leaf changing in the High Sierra. It's awesome. I used to take the kids there when they were young. But since the kids grew up, I don't go back to the mountains. There's too many, like, ghosts. You know, talk about ghosts. You know, you got to understand, when your children grow up and they're not around you, it's hard to go back to places you were with them when they were young. Because he's like, Johnny's running it. Hi, Daddy. You know, you're like, you're on the beach. And there he was. He was 5 years old. I taught him how to shoot a bow and arrow on that beach. I did. I remember it in the cold. I used to always be prepared for like a Russian winter that was coming. How to survive in the snow and how to use a bow and arrow. He was a little kid. And we'd go with the bow and arrow on the beach and we'd shoot at this. So it's going to be a little pulling on my heartstrings, you know, to go back there. But I'm going because I want to go to the cold weather, number one, after the heat wave here. And the majesty of the High Sierra is beyond anything I've ever seen in the world. Honest to God. I don't say it's the Himalayas. But these granite cliffs are something to behold. There's things I love on this ride up on Highway 80 that I should tell you about. So anyway, I'm going up to this hotel in Nevada, and just for one night, because I can't stand vacations, and I don't like seeing people with the nails and then, you know, gambling. But they do whatever. That's the human nature today. People do what they want. I enjoy hanging around the casino and seeing the fools lose their money. I admit that. I like seeing the people on Social Security with the cups. There's something reassuring about in America when you see that. You know that America is still working properly. When you see the oldsters with the cigarette hanging out of their mouth with an oxygen tank on them, puffing on a cigarette, and they're gambling with the casino with the arm, with the big fat arm hanging, with the white nursing shoes. So I enjoy that occasionally, and I'm going to do it. I haven't done it in years. And the scenery, as I say, the blue water of Tahoe. So anyway, they tell me that the hotel is pet-friendly. Which is the only reason I decided to go, because I couldn't see going away without Ted. He's like dying to leave my pet at home. He's my buddy. What can I tell you? He talks to me. He and I talk all the time. He doesn't say much, but I told you I learned how to communicate with the silent as a result of my brother, I know how to communicate with silent individuals and animals. Believe me, they don't have to talk to say a lot. So, hey, you know, I have volumes of conversations. So here's what they wrote me from the hotel today. Dear Dr. Savage, you're certainly most welcome to bring Teddy, but as far as gambling goes, is he 21 years old? I suppose in dog years, that is three. As long as he is within the legal gambling age for canines, as stated per the Nevada Gaming Commission, and is certified with documentation, I see no issues as to bringing him into the gambling casino. I might watch him by the roulette wheel if he is a call chaser. Then she says, as a dog lover, I just want to remind you to not take your eyes off of Teddy if he is outside. We have coyotes up here, and that is one companion that Teddy does not want to interact with. So, well, we have coyotes down here, too. They come in from Mexico. Ka-chung, rimshot. No, we have coyotes down here, too, in the San Francisco Bay Area up in the mountains. We have mountain lions. We have coyotes here. We have mountain. What do we have here? Coyotes, right? They're pretty big. I mean, I've seen them in Florida. We got foxes. I won't let the dog near because a fox is a wild animal. A dog's domesticated. They don't stand a chance size-wise. The same size the fox wins, right? So we got to keep an eye on the little bugger. Oh, hey, the idea of seeing a dog eating in front of your eyes, would that be horrible? If the last thing you see is his eyes screaming with fear to you as the fox runs away with him in his mouth. Oh, yeah, horror story. Let me write that horror story. Let me create the horror comic for you of your head. Can I create the horror comic of your head? Your pet is taken away by a coyote or a mountain lion. The last thing you see is your pet's eyes screaming with fear and the guts hanging out. My mind runs in all those directions. I guess I stay up too late watching movies from World War II. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. So, yeah, I'll take him up there. I'm going to go in the van. You know, it's my favorite car is my van. I have a lot of cars. I do boats. I don't boast about them. I don't talk about them. I have them. My favorite car is a 2005 Chevy van conversion. It sits under a canvas cover most of its time. But it's like a happy thing for me to get in that van. It was like a converted after the factory. So it's got beautiful paint job on it, and it's got captain's chairs, leather captain's chairs. Because I'm a very bad passenger in a car. I can't sit in a car in a seat. It's terrible. This is like it's like high up. The wheel is nice. It's an AM radio only, no FM. It's like a real American van kind of thing. So it looks like you're a coyote yourself smuggling illegals in it every time you're on the highway with the black dog glass. I'm surprised the CHP doesn't pull over every van on the highway just on principle, you know, on suspicion. I mean, every van should be pulled over on a highway in California. You know, it's like clown cars. You pull them over, 16 people run out. You don't know which way they're going to go. They all run right to a Democrat lawyer and scream, me immigrant, you racist, I sue ACLU. Grimshot, ka-ching. New York, WOR, Dane, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, it's a pleasure to speak with you. I'm a college student. I'm a senior this year. I want to let you know I've taken a class on the conservative movement at my university.
Yeah.
We studied Goldwater. We studied Nixon, William F. Buckley, and the movement starting in Orange County, California after World War II, progressing upwards. And by a teacher who is conservative. So there are institutions that have...
Well, I'm surprised. I'll be very honest with you. I am actually the inheritor of all of those predecessors. I don't feel at all ashamed to tell you. I believe that I am the bearer, the standard bearer of the conservative movement today. I don't believe there is anybody in the conservative movement who can outdo me in terms of intellectual firepower, frankly. And I'm going to send you a copy of Trickle Up Poverty to give to your teacher. In fact, stay in line, you're getting two copies, one for you, one for him. By the way, coming up at the bottom of the hour after this wonderful, important commercial break is Charles Gasparino of Fox Business News to talk about the economy and what is going on. I really have a number of major questions for him, and I think he's the right person to answer these questions. Today is Money Day on the Savage Nation, and I'm positive that you'll want to join us for this very, very important discussion here with Charles Gasparino about all things money right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. And, you know, I like hard-hitting guests, or I don't want them at all, and we have one right now. Charles Gasparino is a senior correspondent for the Fox Business Network. You don't know this about Charlie, but he's a former amateur boxer, born to an Italian-American family in the Bronx. Got a BA from Pace University, master's in journalism from the University of Missouri in Columbia. But the man has worked for Newsweek, Wall Street Journal. He is the writer who broke the news of the controversial pay package of former New York Stock Exchange chairman Richard Grasso, former New York City Police Commissioner Bernie Kerik's controversial nomination to run the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and even the dispute surrounding former New York Attorney General, eventual Governor Elliot Spitzer's crackdown on corporate crime. So welcome to the show, Charlie Gasparino. Nice to have you here. Really nice to have you.
Thanks for having me, Michael. I really appreciate it.
The most important question, Charlie, is where in the Bronx?
213th Street and White Plains Road for a little bit, right off Bruckner Boulevard, right before Castle Hill Avenue. And, you know, what's interesting, Michael, is like you talk about every day I have a house in Connecticut and I drive down the Bruckner Expressway and I stop by the apartment I used to live in right there between White Plains Road and Castle Hill Road. And I remember when I was like 7 years old, 8 years old, my parents moved out. We bought a little house in Westchester County, where they did. But here's the interesting thing. My dad was out of work throughout the 1970s. You know, there was no construction in New York City. And he never missed a mortgage payment. He didn't
How?
Need
fanny. You mean he saved his money for those rainy days?
You know what he did? He bought – this just shows you how corruptive the government influence was on the housing market. Fannie and Freddie, by going in there and guaranteeing all those loans and basically giving money to people, they just – remove the sort of incentive to earn your home, to put 20% down. And by the way, when they were doing that, you know what they did? They bid up housing prices to levels that working class people couldn't afford a home unless you took out some crazy loan.
Charlie, but how did your father make the payments if he wasn't working? Was it money he saved?
Do odd job. He would drive a cab. He would bartend. I mean, his normal job. My dad was an iron worker.
In other words, he did what he had to do to survive. He didn't roll over and say to the government, give me a handout.
Listen, a couple times I remember, you know, it was interesting. We ate pancakes for dinner a couple of nights. We're Italian, so my mother would make she would make great stuff out of nothing. You know what I'm saying? But let me tell you something.
Yes.
He wasn't crying to the government for handouts. And, you know, Mike, I just wrote a book called Bought and Paid For. And it's about this government. And what's interesting about this government, about the Obama administration, and this is what I try to point out and Bought and Paid For, is that for all the programs and handouts they're giving the American people, they're saying they're giving the American people, the bottom line is their brand of economics has failed miserably. Main Street gets that crummy stimulus package, which gave us 10% unemployment. But by the way, what I show in this book is Wall Street, all these bankers that contributed to him, you know what? They get billion-dollar bonuses. And listen, I'm not a class warfare guy.
Well, wait, Charlie, look, I understand this, but we read the story today on the show today about from the Boston Herald about U.S. Rep. Barney Frank and the relationship to a $200 million federal bailout to a hedge fund out of they got $200 million in 2009 as part of the $180 billion federal bailout of troubled insurance giant AIG. Doesn't this strike you as bizarre that they could get away with this?
The whole thing is bizarre, but corporate welfare, you know, here's the thing, Mike, and I tried to point this out and Bought and Paid For. People think that Wall Street is sort of a domain of free market capitalists and the Republicans, you know, reign supreme there. Baloney. It's a place of corporate welfare, and guys like Barney Frank and even people that, the economic people that Obama surrounded himself, even the president, as I show in this book, they kiss up to Wall Street. They may call names in public. But let me tell you something. Their policies have basically rewarded Wall Street.
Well, of course. I mean, I go into this whole thing in the Wall Street meltdown and trickle-up poverty, but I want to go back to something very important. Elliot Spitzer, former attorney general, and then wasn't he governor of New York?
Governor of New York.
Okay. Wasn't Elliot Spitzer about to expose or crack down on Wall Street when they suddenly so-called discovered his dalliances? Wasn't it at that point that they exposed him?
I mean, you know, I just so you know, I've covered Elliot Spitzer probably since he came on the scene. He used one of my stories at the Wall Street Journal to launch his first investigation.
Right.
No, see, Eliot Spitzer was governor at that time. He did some of that exposing. Some of it was good. Some of it was really, like, crazy. Like, when he went after Grasso, some of that stuff was bizarre. But, you know, when he was governor, he was kind of out of that business. And I think what was interesting about Spitzer is that he didn't get caught sooner because he was doing that stuff for a long time.
Well, that's what I mean. I had thought that they blew the lid on his hooker thing when he was about to blow the lid on Wall Street, and it was payback from the big boys who had this on him for a long time. But, I mean, you're saying, no, they knew about it. What was the timing, though, of that happening? Was there was no relationship then to Wall Street?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people on the street, a lot of people speculate that, you know, guys like Hank Greenberg, who he cracked down on, he was the former CEO of AIG, and Ken Langone, who was a financier that he basically charged with a civil fraud, along with Dick Grasso, who he went after over his pay package, that those guys somehow conspired to basically, you know, leak that he was going, that they had a private investigator follow him, and that he was going to, you know, basically follow him into the whorehouse and told the FBI. I don't think that's the case. I think they found him, and, you know, I've done a lot of reporting on this. I think they found him the sort of good old-fashioned way through. They check, you know, basically he was taking money out of an account that looked suspicious, and they followed where the money came from. I mean,
well,
I
look, you've but Charlie, you've covered this kind of inside story for years. When we read that a $200 million federal bailout goes to a hedge fund, it's steered by Barney Frank. The guy is a big donor to the Democrat Party. Isn't this going to trigger some kind of Justice Department investigation? I mean, we know the Justice Department is all political in every administration, but isn't this too big to ignore?
It should be too big to ignore, but I'm telling you, that type of corporate welfare, which is that's what that kind of is,
yeah,
as shown in my book, Bought and Paid For, and I guess you show in your book, that sort of stuff is rampant, and some of it goes right up to the line of legality. It's not totally, it's not illegal, but, you know, here's the thing. If the Republicans get Congress, they'll do their thing. They will, for example, they will hold hearings on that if they,
yep,
the Republicans control Congress. So that's how,
right,
and they will force the Justice Department to act because there's congressional oversight.
Yeah, if we have a new attorney general, they'll drag him through the mud at that time. So why are so many of Obama's economic advisors jumping ship? Do they recognize that the ship is hitting a rock and they want to get off before it does?
Some of it is that. I mean, listen, I think, you know, Geithner apparently is going to stay for a while. Rahm Emanuel's leaving. Romer left. I mean, I think it's pretty clear to anybody with half a brain that his economic policies are completely incoherent. You know, you run around, you say that the economy's improving, yet the best measure of the economy, whether it's improving or not, is unemployment. That's going up. You know, or at least staying at really high levels. You know, you say you run around and attack the business community. Listen, Mike, I've been writing sort of nasty stories about Wall Street and big business for years, but you know, you need them to keep people employed.
That's right. I made that point on this show many times that we got to be very careful in attacking all of them, and you start to get into this whole mindset. But the fact is that even the housing bubble, Charlie, and I think you'll agree with me, the average person who had a little extra money was probably buying and selling and trading and making money in flipping houses. They can't sit there and grouse now that the economy, that the housing market collapsed. So some guys made hundreds of millions or billions, and they made tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. They did it because the bubble was going up and they rode it with them, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, listen, here's the thing. As I keep, my book, I basically point out this whole notion of Wall Street getting bailed out and taking excessive risk. But, you know, Main Street did as well. I mean, think of it this way. And I had, a huge argument with somebody on Fox Business the other day when he was saying how, you know, don't I feel sorry for the people that are getting foreclosed upon? I mean, most of the people that bought these homes were gambling. They were, like, trading stocks. And
yes,
they knew that these things, they didn't want to live in them. They wanted to flip them. They knew they couldn't afford them. They figured
right,
they'd flip them in 2 years.
Yes.
And you know, when you gamble, sometimes you lose.
Charlie, here's the last question, which is this. We're in a stage where there's no interest in the banks, so people don't know what to do with their money. So they're going and they're buying gold and things like that, or putting them in T-bills. How long can the government sustain a zero interest situation when they're printing money? Do you think we're going to go into a Carter-like inflationary cycle where we saw 18% interest?
No, who knows? I can tell you that the economy now is so precarious that it's, you know, the problem is that people aren't working. I mean, if the stimulus package actually worked, you know, which it didn't, and, you know, my book, Bought and Paid For, I go through all the reasons why it didn't. If that worked, I would be worrying near term about inflation. But, you know, here's the other thing, Mike. You can't have 0% interest rates for 3 years and not have some weird, really bad long-term effects. And what those effects are, I have no idea. That's why I'm not in the market. I don't make stock recommendations.
But isn't it true that in historical reference, looking back rather to countries that have been here before, don't they have to start an inflationary cycle in order to sustain the economy? Isn't that what has to happen?
When you print money like they're printing now, 0% interest rates, remember they're also doing this thing known as quantitative easing. What they're doing is they're buying treasury bonds from the banks, yeah, and that puts money directly in the system. When you do stuff like that, it leads to massive inflation. At the very least, it devalues the dollar. And that's it.
Yes, it's like putting sugar into a gas tank. Eventually, the engine's going to stop running, in my opinion. Anyway, Charlie, you're on Fox Business Network. When do you appear?
I appear every day. And I'm a reporter. You know, I break stories about Wall Street. I did it for the CNBC before I was there, and I did it for the Wall Street Journal for 9 years and Newsweek. And I worked at the mainstream media, basically, and I still do. I'm a reporter. Which is why a lot of people tell me about, you know, the book I just put out, Bought and Paid For. It's more political. It's not conservatively political. It's pointing out maybe a conservative message, a right of center message. But what I'm trying to point out is that if you think Wall Street is filled with a bunch of right wing capitalists, you're wrong. It's the home of crony capitalism, and that is hurting our economy right now.
I agree with you. Well, I hope that I can visit with you real soon to talk about trickle up poverty, which is, as you well know, taking the country by storm. And I look forward to seeing you on Fox Business News. Charlie Gasparino, thank you very much for being with us. The time is 4:49. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Michael Savage, we just got a story that came to us that military ballots may not be counted in Illinois. Military ballots may not be counted in Illinois because the corrupt Democrat Party accidentally did not comply with the 09 Military and Overseas Voter Empowerment Act and mail their absentee ballots 45 days prior to election day to overseas troops. So once again, the Democrats, the dirty anti-American Democrats, are trying to make certain that the election is stolen and bought for the same way that the 1919 World Series was stolen by a criminal gangster. They're trying to steal the elections in Illinois. And it's a very tight state. It's interesting that even the U.S. Justice Department is investigating the state of Illinois, certain counties in particular, to investigate and find out how this happened. But I have no faith that this will actually lead to anything. When I read the Justice Department spokeswoman Zachiel Hinojosa confirmed that Illinois is being investigated for the absentee ballot infraction, I have about as much faith in the U.S. Justice Department getting to the bottom of this and punishing anyone and making sure that our military vote as I do in virtually any corrupt nation following it up. You know what I'm saying? It's getting worse by the day under this Chicago gang that's running America. How else are we going to survive if I don't tell you what I see going on here? A gang has taken over the United States of America. A gang that is to be feared and a gang that is wrecking everything that is sacred to this nation. Now military ballots may not count in Illinois. And this is the third state where the Democrats have done this. And you tell me that there's no difference between the parties? You know I'm no big fan of the Republicans. But for some reason, the media scrutinizes them far more. Therefore, we are safer with them. You know something? That's true. I just stumbled on a truth. The one reason I have for voting Republican instead of Democrat is that the media does not give the Republicans a pass on any level. So we're safer with them. The Democrats can do anything. They are doing anything, and they're given a pass virtually day and night. And so the military now can't vote in Illinois. Their ballots are being thrown in the garbage. But you think I'm surprised? No, I'm not surprised. No, not at all. Tucson, Arizona. Charles, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to let you know that your book has been blowing my mind. I listen to you every day, but this book has been an eye-opener, and it's actually caused me to have to read the book after my wife and son go to sleep, and then my wife wakes up, and it's past 12, and she's asking why I'm still up reading this book. I cannot put it down.
Well, Charles, what is keeping you up in the book? Tell me what's keeping you up in the book. What have you found that's alarmed you?
I tell you, the Nightmare on Wall Street chapter has literally unraveled things that I thought I knew about, but I didn't know. I realized I didn't know anything, and I was shocked.
Well, it's very interesting because we had the chapter heavily researched and also vetted by a lawyer to make sure we weren't going to get sued for making things up. And yet names are named, and we tell you what they did, how much money they stole, and the fact of the matter is it's all real. This country has frankly been... Look, the bottom line of the Wall Street chapter, Trickle Up Poverty, is this. The entire collapse of 08 was orchestrated by powerful money interests to bring about a panic, to allow an unknown man to become president of the United States of America who would give them free rein to rape us even more.
It's unbelievable. Makes me sick.
Would you believe that we'd come to this point in American history, Charles, that they could get away with this so nakedly?
Hello?
All right, Charles, I'm going to send you another copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Thank you very much. Let's go flying over to New York City on WOR. Bill, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Michael, I've gone into my local Barnes & Noble once your book was released.
Yeah.
And as you first walk in the door, I couldn't see it because it was buried with the new releases behind their Kindle thing, whatever they have.
Right.
So, but I found it. I put it up on the display where they had it.
Good.
The next night I walked in, I didn't see it. The third night I walked in, and they finally put it up on the shelf to the right of the door as you go in with all the other books.
Well, Bill, that's why my book is only number 3 this week. It was released on Tuesday, not Monday. The stores didn't have enough copies for the mobs that came in, and many of the clerks were not displaying the book the way they were supposed to. I am counting on my loyal band of listeners, and I'm going to have to say it again, to go out there and make this book number 1 next week because we only have one more shot. I'm number 3 on the New York Times bestseller list as a result of last week. But unless we burn through these copies in there and everyone buys them, who intends to buy one for Christmas and gets them today, tomorrow, or Friday, we're not going to hit that number 1 slot. And we got to knock the comedian out. We got to knock the Washington Post clown out. And we got to show America that America is listening and reading and learning what's actually going on. Thank you very much. You get a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Chicago John, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
It's an honor. I went to my Walmart to get the book, and 3 times they were sold out. So what I
you see
say,
now? People say, "Oh, look at him! He's only number 3 because the books they didn't print enough. If they had printed enough, my book would have been number 1 on the NYT list this week. They didn't have enough. The people couldn't get them, so they didn't buy them. Okay."
And I bribed the sales lady to actually I gave her a couple bucks. I says, "Well, when you get them in tomorrow," I says, "can you save me a copy?" She says, "Yes, absolutely, I'll save."
Unbelievable! This is like the time. Remember the times when cars were hot and you had to pay over sticker price? I never heard of that happening yet in the book world. We have to bribe a clerk to hold a copy for you. All right, it proves that this book is the hottest book in America, irrespective of the actual gross numbers. And I'm going to send you another copy of Trickle Up Poverty. It's taking America by storm. This is a book that could change the course of human events. It's what it was written for. There have been books over the years that have changed the world. We go back to The Republic by Plato. Okay? The Communist Manifesto changed the world, for the worse, obviously. How about Uncle Tom's Cabin? It changed the views of slavery in the North and continues to serve as a reminder of slavery and other inhuman acts. There are other books that changed the nature of human society, and I am hoping that Trickle Up Poverty joins that list of books that changed the world.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage saves talk radio. Savage wants to run for the Senate under one condition: if he can be the first electronic senator or the digital senator. Now, and I asked, you know, I hate traveling to begin with, but it's one night, it's up in the mountains, you know, it should be beautiful. I haven't been there since the children, you know, grew up and left, but I used to love going up to the High Sierra. So anyway, I made a reservation. Then I said, can I bring my dog? So the manager said, yes, you may, because we are a dog-friendly, you know, location. So then I sent her a note. I said, is he allowed in a gambling casino up there in Nevada? Because I said, you know, he sometimes likes to gamble, and now that he's a best-selling dog author, he may want to gamble some of his earnings. So I just got this email back. It says, dear Mr. Savage, you are certainly most welcome to bring Teddy. As far as gambling goes, is he 21 years old? I suppose in dog years, that is three. As long as he is within the legal gambling age for canines, as stated per the Nevada Gaming Commission, and is certified to be able to gamble with documentation, I see no issues. I might watch him by the roulette wheel if he is a call chaser. As a dog lover, I just want to remind you to not take your eyes off of Teddy if he is outside. We have coyotes up here, and that is one companion that Teddy does not want to interact with. Best regards. General Manager's Office. I think that's very cute, right?
Very nice.
And now, the other day I read some anti-Obama jokes that my friend Jack had forwarded. And he says, you know the honeymoon is over for Obama when the comedians start ripping him. So here are some of them. I mean, these come from the mainstream guys. Jay Leno, Conan O'Brien, David Letterman, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, David Letterman. These are the mainstream yucksters, right? Here's what they did. On their own show, Beowulf. And my neighbor said, Mike, you got to rerun these. The liberals are asking us to give Obama time. We agree, 25 to life would be appropriate. Jay Leno. America needs Obamacare like Nancy Pelosi needs a Halloween mask. Symbol shot. Have you heard about McDonald's new Obama value meal? Order anything you like, and the guy behind you has to pay for it. Gung, gung. What does Barack Obama call lunch with a convicted felon? A fundraiser, Jay Leno. What is the difference between Obama's cabinet and a penitentiary? One is filled with tax evaders, blackmailers, and threats to society. The other is for housing prisoners, David Letterman. If Nancy Pelosi and Obama were on a boat in the middle of the ocean and started to sink, who would be saved? America, says Jimmy Fallon. Oh, that's rough. Jimmy Kimmel says, what's the difference between Obama and his dog, Bo? Bo has papers. Kadoom. And Letterman said, what was the most positive result of the Cash for Clunkers program? It took 95% of the Obama bumper stickers off the road. Ka-ching. Pretty amazing stuff, isn't it?
That's, I mean, really. That's how America feels.
Well, that they are ripping him indicates that they know which way the wind is blowing, and they know that the country is moving away from, you know, from him, right?
That's right. He's fair game at this point. They know that.
So there's a lot of stuff that's breaking now that we have to talk about in the Savage Nation. The biggest story today is, well, there's a couple of big stories, and I have to go to it again. Trickle Up Poverty is a book that can change the political landscape of America come November. Remember, it's in the top three. It was number one on Amazon for 3 days. I'm going up against people with unlimited media exposure based on only 4 days of sales. It already is number three. You know that, Beowulf. It was 4 days of sales, not five.
Yeah.
No publicity other than this show. And I've proven that talk radio is still the most powerful medium in America in terms of actual ideas. Now, what came out today is about Bonnie Frank in the Boston Herald, and it says, rival blasts Frank's swanky free jet ride. There's much more to the story. U.S. Rep. Bonnie Frank. Immersed in one of the toughest political fights of his career, took a free private jet to the Virgin Islands, courtesy of a Maine congresswoman's billionaire fiancé, whose company received a $200 million federal bailout, the Boston Herald has learned. Now, this is a crazy story. Old Bonnie flew to the tropical paradise in 2009 on a $25 million jet owned by Paloma Partners honcho S. Donald Sussman, the fiancé of U.S. Rep. Chelly Pingree, D. Maine. Now, here's the kicker. Paloma Securities, a subsidiary of Sussman's Greenwich, Connecticut-based hedge fund, got $200 million in 2009 as part of the $180 billion federal bailout of troubled insurance giant AIG Records show. Can you believe this, Beowulf? That $200 million was skimmed off for this guy, for a hedge fund?
Such rampant corruption. It's
unbelievable. This is criminality. Listen to what old Bonnie Frank says. Frank, who voted for the bailout in 2008, took the trip around Christmas of 2009. He reported the trip in Required House Financial Filings and valued the trip at $1,500. He originally listed the trip, vaguely, as first-class round-trip travel by private aircraft, close quote, in a congressional filing in May. Then in July, he amended the report to show he traveled from Portland, Maine to the Virgin Islands. He called the discrepancy a clerical error. Sussman, who got the $200 million bailout for his hedge fund through Bonnie Frank, is a huge Democratic campaign donor with homes in Maine and Connecticut, but he lives in St. John, the Virgin Islands, where, by the way, there's no taxes. Did you know that, Beowulf? We looked into it.
Oh, yeah. He's saving a little bit of money that way, by the way.
Spokespersons for Sussman and Congresswoman Pingree declined to comment. Pingree also is facing criticism from the Maine GOP for using Sussman's jet. Well, I ask you, Beowulf, how much dirtier does it get than this? I mean, if I said we become a banana republic, people would accuse me of being something other than Cuomophobic, and I don't want to go there.
And keep in mind that Barney Frank, this is the guy who structured the whole Financial Reform Act. This is the guy who's putting in place financial reform. Good luck.
How did they get away with it? I don't understand. I mean, the Republicans, good for them, are finding out what's going on. Michelle Bachmann rakes in $5.4 million, smashing congressional fundraising record. Let me tell you, the Tea Party is beyond belief right now. And there's a headline right now on Drudge of Michelle, not Bachmann, Obama saying, "Pray for my Barack, keeping spirits clean around us." Spirits? Now, on Drudge, there's a big story just came out about this guy, Reggie. Do you know about this one, Beowulf?
I hadn't heard about Reggie, no.
Well, it's a very big story, and it's a story coming out. But there's a young man who lives in the White House by the name of Reggie. And he's there all the time. He's his, you know, his constant companion.
Oh, that's right. Obama's assistant or what have you.
Oh, yeah. In the past, it used to be a Marine. Now it's a personal assistant from Chicago by the name of Reggie. And the president was asked if he owned an iPad. He said, "I have an iReggie, who has my books, my newspapers, and my music all in one place." President Obama answered. He said, "We have heard that iReggie also plays basketball." There's something wrong with this picture, Beowulf.
I'll say.
Every day it gets odder and odder and odder. But, you know, one study after another shows that the number one issue for everyone is the economy, the economy, the economy. I mean, the other issues take far, far second role, you know, second place to the economy. One study after another shows that the people are growing cold on Obama. But the number one issue for all of them is the economy, obviously. It's not really anything more than that. And the tyranny of this administration is very important. But even if you look at one of his core support groups, the Jewish voter, a new study just came out that say American Jews, 78% of whom voted to make Obama president, are continuing to move away from Obama and his policies. But if you look at how important are the following issues, the economy is the number one issue, 87%, unemployment, 81%, healthcare, 80%, Iraq-Afghanistan war, 66%, financial reform, 62%. Israel's a far distant 61% of importance. Foreign policy, energy policy, immigration is 43%. And so liberal Jews polled by the American Jewish Committee shows that the economy is the number one issue, even amongst this group. And I think that's pretty much true, don't you, Beowulf?
Absolutely. And you predicted it when you decided to take an economic bent in your book, Trickle Up Poverty. You knew that was going to be the focus of the election.
Right, right.
Savage.
From chapter one of TUP. Here it is. Many years ago, while I was in graduate school in Hawaii, a near-death boating experience on the high seas taught me a life lesson that directly relates to the problems we're having with President Obama. Do you know what it's like for a kid from New York City to wind up in Hawaii? I'd never been to a place as remarkable as Hawaii. It was like walking into heaven itself. When you land in heaven, you think you can do anything. Almost overnight, you have hubris. Hubris is a sense of excessive self-confidence that only children and the mad should have. But when a grown-up has hubris, it becomes very dangerous. And in my case, that was true. So I get to the islands, and it's a magical time. I never saw sunsets like this. They can break your heart. And the flowers, the plumeria blossoms, are beyond description. I used to bicycle up to the University of Hawaii, and I would see plumeria blossoms lying on the sidewalk. I'd stop the bicycle and pick up the plumeria blossoms for a closer look, and of course to smell them. I'd never seen anything like them. Sure, we had rose petals on the fence back in the Bronx when I was a kid. They were soft and beautiful in their own way, but this was something unique. The perfumed scent of the plumeria was unlike anything on the mainland. There I am, surrounded by such incredible beauty. The yellow hibiscus, the golden sunsets, the colorful rainforest birds in the back of the valley that I'd never known existed. And before long, I start to get tuned into my own body in a way I'd never been tuned into. Here's how the Hawaiian transformation works. Even if you've never lived in the tropics, you instinctively start shedding clothing. It's off with the long sleeves, the shoes, and leather. You put it all away, and now you're in flip-flops and shorts. At night, the breeze zips through your sleeves, and you start to become alive in a new way. You're drawn to the ocean. With the migratory seagulls soaring overhead, you start to feel like the original man. In that magical state of mind, you decide to buy a sailboat. I bought the Taranga. Actually, it was the Tarangi, a sloop-rigged sailing vessel about 22 feet long, made primarily of white oak. It had been built in Oregon and sailed out by somebody to Hawaii. I bought it for next to nothing. Although she was in perfect shape, she had no engine. I kept her in the Aliwai Marina and quickly learned most people who own boats mainly use them to drink on and just hang out. Me? I was foolish enough to actually want to sail the boat, even though I knew nothing about sailing. What's more, I decided to take her out without an engine. I figured it would be easy to get out because the wind was prevailing westward out of the harbor. A few of my new friends released the lines, cast me off, and pushed me backward for my maiden voyage. So there I was sailing down the Aliwai Channel and then out into the ocean by myself. I zipped along with the sail wide open, heading further out to sea. I was thinking, this is unreal. I can do anything. It wasn't long before I realized I had miscalculated the situation. Simply put, I didn't know how to get back. Suddenly my mind was racing for answers. You know, how do I turn this thing around if the wind is blowing out to sea? I had no idea, not a clue. The sloop didn't come with an owner's manual. I hadn't paid for lessons. So I'm thinking I had better figure out what to do because at the rate I was going, I'd soon be in the middle of the Pacific Ocean with no way back at all. What's worse, I had no radio, no flares, no engine, and no provisions. I don't think I even had a life preserver. I know that sounds crazy, but remember, I was an inexperienced operator. I didn't know what I didn't know. Besides, the late 60s was an age when many people had total madness about what they could do and accomplish, whether or not it had a basis in reality. I admit all I had was hubris. My first move, I resorted to common sense. I dropped the sails because that, of course, would cut the motion of the boat. With the sails secured, I tried using the tiller to turn the boat around. You know, flip-flop, flip-flop, until I got the boat pointing back toward land. Then I figured if the wind is blowing against me, there must be a way to go into a prevailing wind and still move against it. I had seen other people do it. And little by little, lo and behold, I was able to return to the harbor. I still don't know whether it was pure luck, a strong undercurrent, or God's hand pushing me to safety. I quickly learned that sailing is not for the amateur. He is the connection to President Obama. America is the boat. Whoever is at the helm determines her destination. If he's experienced, if he's wise, if he understands the fundamentals of boating, then all is well. She'll remain safe and strong, able to sail again for generations to come. If not, apart from a lucky break or God's direct intervention, she'll drift further out into dangerous waters without a prayer or survival. It all comes down to the heart, soul, and experience of the sailor. Does the sailor have a healthy respect for the laws of boating on the high seas, or does he ignore them and do as he pleases, putting himself and the boat in mortal peril? Is he wise enough to recognize the danger signs on the horizon and quickly change course? Or in the face of certain disaster, is he too arrogant and reckless to make the necessary adjustments while there's still time? We're living in dangerous times, page 3. We have a political novice in America's wheelhouse. Moreover, the president is propelled only by a dangerous hyperdosage of hubris. Is that an overstatement? We all know the former junior senator from Illinois had about a 5-minute political career before campaigning for the highest office in the land. In other words, Obama has no governing experience. He doesn't know how to lead. Worse, he has been indoctrinated by Marxist professors. He's convinced that the failed ideas of Marxism and socialism will suddenly work now that he's in charge of the ship. However, the navigational chart he's relying on to steer the country from capitalism to socialism is fatally flawed. And now he's lost and over his head. Obama has taken a hammer and sickle to our economy, saddling us with a national debt we can never repay. He's exercising ultra-tolerance with Islamic terrorists, rendering America vulnerable. What's more, there's not a scintilla of bipartisan consensus in Congress, as Obama had promised. It's gridlock while the middle class is shell-shocked. Let me put it to you this way. Obama never ran a state before he became the head of state.
Savage.
There are reports of an Al-Qaeda magazine that actually gives out tips on how to conduct attacks on civilians in America and how to carry out their own jihad. Joining us now is Eric Stackelback with a report on this.
Michael, it's always a pleasure to be here. And just a heads up, so you know, to all the listeners, there is a new issue of Al-Qaeda's Glossy magazine. That's right. Al-Qaeda, the terrorist group, has its own magazine now. You won't find it at Barnes & Noble or on newsstands. You will find it online. It's an Al-Qaeda glossy magazine. It debuted this summer. It's called Inspire, of all things, Michael. And obviously they're trying to inspire people to commit jihad and kill innocent civilians. But this web magazine is put out by Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, Al-Qaeda's Yemen branch. Now, that branch of Al-Qaeda has been involved in several major terrorist plots on American soil over the past year, specifically Anwar al-Awlaki, who he's a guy you and I have discussed many times here on the show, Michael. He's based in Yemen. He's the real Al-Qaeda mouthpiece in Yemen. He's not the only American in Yemen. There's a few Americans who have left to travel to Yemen, to join Al-Qaeda, to join jihad, and they are the driving force behind this new Al-Qaeda web magazine. Now, the first issue debuted in the summertime, and it included an article, Michael, and this is in all seriousness, it included an article titled, How to Build a Bomb in the Kitchen of Your Mom.
Are you kidding?
I'm not kidding. This was actually the title of this article. And that's why this magazine, I think, can be so effective, Michael. It is geared specifically toward an American English-speaking audience. That's the whole purpose of this magazine, is to connect Al-Qaeda, connect their message, relay their message to a Western English-speaking audience, specifically America.
How could this be going on?
Now, you might hear about this at first and say, oh, Al-Qaeda magazine, you know, coffee table magazine, it's a big joke, it sounds funny. But look, I can tell you that the jihadists in this country, young American jihadi Muslims in this country, are taking this deadly serious. They're waiting for this new edition of Inspire to arrive in their mailbox every few months. And this could be highly effective for them, Michael. The new issue has made some headlines this week for a few things. And I can tell you, that U.S. intelligence officials are very concerned about this. Some of the articles in this new edition of Inspire magazine include an article which recommends that jihadists in America attack restaurants right here in Washington, D.C., where I'm sitting, during lunch hour with firearms.
Oh, my God.
The goal would be to kill U.S. government workers in Washington, D.C., so you have a jihadi assault on restaurants here in Washington, D.C. during midday, when I can tell you, Michael, I'm looking out the window now, the restaurants here in Washington during lunchtime are packed. So this is number one. Number two, the magazine also recommends that jihadis in America use their pickup trucks, literally use a pickup truck, put blades, fastened blades, on the front of a pickup truck, Michael, and use it to, quote, mow down infidels in the name of Allah.
No.
Use a pickup truck like a lawnmower, Al-Qaeda is saying. Drive into a large crowd, a densely packed crowd of U.S. civilians, and kill as many people as possible. So those were the two main things that stuck out for me, Michael. And number three, another prescription from this Al-Qaeda magazine, was for any scientifically inclined jihadi, I don't know how many of them there are, but say a young Muslim with a degree in chemistry, microbiology, Al-Qaeda magazine is recommending that they make or try to develop weapons of mass destruction, and the magazine specifically mentions nerve gas.
Oh, my God.
So this is very serious stuff. I'm telling you, people might laugh, oh, an Al-Qaeda magazine, where's Alfred E. Newman? Alfred E. Jihadi, is he on the cover? People could laugh and joke around about it, but in all seriousness, young Muslims are taking this as marching orders when this magazine comes out, especially when a guy like Anwar al-Awlaki is involved, Michael. He has an article in this issue of the magazine. In the inaugural issue back in the summertime, he had two articles, Adam Gadan, the American mouthpiece from California, from Al-Qaeda, white convert. He's also got an article in there. So Awlaki, as I've discussed with you before, Michael, is the most influential Islamic jihadist in the world right now, surpassing even Osama bin Laden. Anything he touches, the global jihad movement is all over. I can tell you from all the homegrown jihad cases I've investigated over the past several years, but particularly in the past year, Awlaki is the common thread throughout every homegrown jihad case in America over the past year. Anwar Awlaki is cited as either the inspiration or he is a guy who was directly involved in the plotting. Think of Fort Hood, think of the Christmas Day underwear bomber, and the Times Square bomber, Faisal Shahzad, back in May, also was a guy who was inspired by Anwar Awlaki.
Hmm.
So his connection, and he's a guy who's fluent in English, who was raised in America, his connection to this magazine is what gives it so much street cred and what gives it so much potential impact. Now, another interesting aspect of this, Michael, is the attacks, if you notice, the attacks that Al-Qaeda is recommending. These are literally terror tips. This is literally a how-to guide for jihadis. Al-Qaeda itself is calling this magazine Open Source Jihad. And the tips they're offering, if you notice, are smaller scale. These aren't, other than the WMD recommendation, which Al-Qaeda is always going to do, always has, always will. That's the ultimate goal for them, to acquire weapons of mass destruction and kill millions.
Right.
But other than that, the recommendations here, you know, use firearms, open up fire in restaurants, use a pickup truck to mow people down. The thread there is that these are low-maintenance, low-tech, inexpensive-style attacks. And this is the trend, as I've mentioned here so many times, Michael, that Al-Qaeda is moving towards. I call it the chip-away strategy. You walk into a shopping mall. You walk into a movie theater. You open fire. A Fort Hood-type deal where you have a lone wolf opening fire, killing 20 people. An underwear bomber. What about a Mumbai-style attack? There's a fear of that right now in Europe. Have 10 jihadis just fan out across an American city with assault rifles and, say, grenades. These are all distinct possibilities. This is the next phase. I think Al-Qaeda knows, they realize that these attacks, these smaller scale attacks, are very tough to stop.
True.
They really are. The ultimate goal, obviously, is to top 9/11. But in the meantime, I think al-Qaeda has come to the realization that, hey, these smaller scale attacks can be very effective economically, psychologically, could damage the psyche, give a lot of people in America anxiety. If you hit restaurants, hit shopping malls, does the economy have some trouble? And also, the PR value of these attacks, Michael, can't be underestimated. You think of the Mumbai attacks, that completely owned the news cycle for at least a week. Fort Hood, same deal. Underwear bomber, same deal. And al-Qaeda loves that. They love to be in the limelight. They want this to make waves. Osama bin Laden himself, I've interviewed an Islamic terrorist who was a former associate of Osama bin Laden. He told me that after the 1998 embassy bombings in Africa, where the two U.S. embassies in Africa were blown up by al-Qaeda terrorists, he told me that Osama bin Laden, this man had a one-on-one meeting with bin Laden. Bin Laden literally talked about the media coverage for 30 minutes at least. He went on and on about the media coverage of those embassy bombings. He loved it. He reveled in it.
Well, of course.
So the media attention that these kinds of attacks attract is also very attractive to al-Qaeda. So the smaller scale attacks are another trend that you see in this new web magazine. But I think one of the most interesting points here, Alaki is kind of the brains behind this, but also another American in Yemen with al-Qaeda, a guy by the name of Samir Khan. Very interesting case here, Michael. Actually, an infuriating case.
Why do you say that?
He's apparently the creator of this Inspire magazine. Alaki is kind of the brains. Khan, I guess, does the day-to-day on this magazine, this Samir Khan. He lived in North Carolina. He was in North Carolina running radical Islamic websites for years, posting footage of U.S. troops being killed in Iraq, in Afghanistan, posting pro-Al-Qaeda material on a website out of North Carolina. And, Michael, he was literally living in his parents' basement in North Carolina. I believe it's outside of Charlotte where he lived. So this guy was doing this for years. He was monitored by our intelligence services for years. He was absolutely on their radar screen. Somehow, he was able to continue operating this website, number one. And number two, he was able to slip out of the country and travel to Yemen.
Unbelievable.
Now he's in Yemen. He's hooked up with the likes of Anwar al-Awlaki. And he is running this al-Qaeda magazine, this al-Qaeda web magazine, which could very well inspire young Americans to carry out attacks here. How does this happen? How is this man, number one, allowed to operate this website? And number two, how is he allowed to just kind of disappear through our fingers off to Yemen? And in the new edition of this magazine, he writes, quote, "I am proud to be a traitor to America."
Well, and of course, we just let him go.
So not only did he escape our clutches, but now he's crowing about it. He's gloating about it from his new base in Yemen. He says he's proud to be al-Qaeda, and he's al-Qaeda, quote, to the core. So this is, I think, a very disturbing aspect of all this. This guy, we had him. He was here. The creator of this al-Qaeda online magazine was here living in North Carolina. So was Anwar al-Awlaki for years. He was actually he was born here in New Mexico. He came back until he was seven. He lived in the U.S. Then he went back to Yemen, came back, went to college here in the U.S., was imam at various mosques here in the U.S., San Diego, about 10 minutes from where I'm sitting right now, outside of Washington, D.C., in Falls Church, Virginia, Northern Virginia. So these were guys that we had. They were on our radar screen. Now there's a concept in Islam called taqiyya.
Well, what is that?
What that means in English is deception. And Anwar al-Awlaki was steeped in taqiyya during his time here in America. He was able to pull the wool over the eyes, and it's not that difficult, Michael, as you know, of the liberal media who wants so badly to believe that Islam is inherently peaceful. It's just a tiny minority of extremists. That's what the mainstream liberal media wants to hear. That's what they want to hear. And that's what they believed when it came out of Anwar al-Awlaki's mouth. That's what they believe when it comes out of the Ground Zero imam's mouth. But at the end of the day, it is taqiyya. deception. It's a word a lot of people probably have never heard of, but it's a very important term, a very important concept to understand with our Islamist enemies. They employ this tactic of taqiyya.
Thanks for the reports, Eric.
Michael, thanks again. And as always, you can catch my show, Stackelbeck on Terror, on cbnnews.com. Thanks again.
This is another example of how the Obama administration is certainly not doing their job, which is to keep us safe. Is there anything that this administration has done for the American people that you can think of to make us proud of? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Right, so today we have the president giving a speech at GW University. Listen to this.
If we work hard, if we're unified, if we're respectful of one another.
Let's be respectful of one another after he disrespected everyone who didn't vote for him.
If we stay focused on
focused.
Not just the short term, but on the next generation, that we can solve our problems. And so I think, you know, letting your friends know that.
Well, hold
America
it. There has been no respect from the White House or the Dems to anyone about unemployment or Obamacare or about honesty or anything like that.
America has gone through tougher problems than this, and we've solved them, and we're going to solve these problems in our generation. Communicating that confidence about the future is going to be really important.
How about listening to what the people are saying, Mr. Obama?
And what makes me confident is all of you. Because I get one of the great things about being president is I get to meet the American people from every state, every walk of life, every station. And you guys give me confidence. You guys give me hope. But I really need you to get out on November 2nd. Because then if all of you vote, I promise we're going to do just great.
You have no confidence in these people at all. You wouldn't be running all over town telling them to get out and vote. Well, Hillary's led Bill Clinton out again. This time to stump for none other than old Harry Reid.
Why would you give away the
you
Senate Majority Leader who has delivered time and time?
So why pay for him to stay?
Now you're going to start playing that Where's Sharon game because she's hiding out, according to the local news. And I might hide out, too, if I said I wanted to get rid of Social Security and Medicare. Because they're going. Somebody's going to say, you still believe that? I might hide out, too, if I said Harry Reid was wrong to spend 20 years trying to free us of all that nuclear waste.
Waste? Let's not talk about waste.
Everybody.
Harry knows all about that. Go on, Mr. Clinton. Tell us something we don't know.
You and I know that the only reason this is a tough race is that this is a tough time. And when people are having a tough time and they're frightened and they're confused.
Frightened, confused.
And they're mad.
Then mad is insane
it's
if
hard
you're
to
a lib.
Think.
Who do you think created all of this? It was this administration. Now listen to Condoleezza Rice on tape.
When you talk about our president, he is our president, but we are awfully critical of our presidents.
Yes, and in this case, deservedly so.
We treat them pretty toughly, and I don't see race in every criticism of President Obama. I think.
Listen, Ms. Rice, Obama has injected more race into this presidency than any predecessor.
Mistake to assume that if people are critical, that it's always because of race.
No, it's not always race either. It's religion, too. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan from what's going on in the White House, but with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. You know, I run into people every once in a while, and it's funny what people remember and what they don't remember. You spend your rack your brain coming up with the most important stories, and you try to explain to them. It's very hard for people to pick up. They remember the simple things that you say. And one of the things people all remember is I went into Starbucks to get a coffee, and I said, give me a small. And the girl says to me, you mean tall. And I say small, and she says tall. I say small, and she says tall. That everyone remembers. The pebble in the shoe that Cato the Elder wrote about, that the average Roman did not care about what the legions were doing in Franconia or 1,000 miles away from Rome. The average Roman didn't care about that. They cared about the pebble in the shoe, meaning what affected them? What affected them, the day-to-day life? So again, I go into a chain drugstore this morning, to buy mouthwash and this and that. I like to shop for myself. I mean, I could get someone to do it. I think it keeps you balanced to go down aisles and look for things. So I'm going down an aisle looking for things in one of the chain stores. I get what I want. I'm looking at aspirin because I don't like the fact that, Bayer has now switched everything with his now yellow number 5 dye in the low-dose aspirin, which a lot of men take. I've been taking it for years. I don't like that they're putting artificial coloring in aspirin. I don't know why they're poisoning everyone's liver. The 85 milligram, do they have to put yellow? So I went and looked for generics with every one of them is the same. I bent over. All the change fell out of my pocket. I bicycled down there. I was so humiliated. No one saw, but all the change was on the floor. What was it? $1 worth? $2? I don't know what. I'm one of these guys. I carry change. I like to spend it. I'm still like a kid inside. You know what I mean? It's money. I don't throw it out. Some people don't even spend it. Some don't carry it. It jingles. They read in the GQ many years ago from all of the sophisticated morons who don't have $12 to their name. Don't carry change in your pocket. It shows you're cheap. Falls on the floor. So I said to myself, I have a decision now. Am I going to get on my knees now, pick up the quarters, the dimes, the nickels, and the pennies? Or am I going to leave it on the floor? I had to decide. I got on my knees, and I picked up the nickels, the dimes, and the quarters, and the pennies. It was a clean floor, but I didn't like doing it, particularly in a large chain drugstore. I did it because I grew up poor where every penny counted. It's ingrained in me. I can't throw money in the garbage. I'll give money away. I'm a good tipper, but I won't throw it away, and I don't want to get arrogant because I feel, I know, it's like a child. I feel I'm tempting fate. I leave all that change on the floor. God says, oh, you don't need the money? Good, let's take away more from you. It's the way it is. I have this little, you know, notion about God and heaven. I'm a child in that regard.
Savage.